Captain Curry, it's a pleasure to meet you, and Ken, thank you for arranging this. My name is John Tintera, and today I'm speaking with Captain Curry, a member of the VFP-62, and he is here today with Ken Jack, who is co-author of the new book, Blue Moon Over Cuba, which talks about VFP-62's role in the Cuban Missile Crisis. Good afternoon to you both.
Good afternoon.
Captain Curry, you flew RF-8A Crusaders as well as F-4 Phantoms in Vietnam. How was the Crusader suited for its role as a photo recon jet?
I thought that it was an excellent aircraft for that mission. It was a relatively stable platform, and with the Chicago aerial cameras that were put into it sometime during the time that I was in the squadron in the early 1960 period, that it achieved very excellent resolution and good imagery with the aircraft.
Were you also doing photo recon in Vietnam as well?
No, I did not. I was a fighter pilot then, flying F-4 aircraft. Every time that the reconnaissance aircraft, and then the carriers I deployed on, we had the North American RA-5C Vigilante aircraft doing those missions. So I participated in a number of escort missions with the RA-5C.
So was having an earlier part of your career as a photo recon jet, did that prepare you in some special way to be a fighter pilot later?
I'm not sure that it did. I guess one thing, you had to be very precise. You hold the aircraft steady while you were doing the filming. But I think just the general carrier aviation that I did flying the photo Crusader was good preparation for my later role in two squadron tours with fighter aircraft.
As Ken has mentioned, you were on the USS Enterprise supporting President Kennedy's blockade of Cuba during the Cuban Missile Crisis. What was the role of the carrier task force during that time?
During that time, we were more just in preparation. We did a lot of training flights just to maintain proficiency. But I think we were there for any contingent operations that might have come up. And it did require the one mission to fly around the perimeter of Guantanamo Bay, because the Marines heard noises on the other side of the fence at night and wanted to know what was going on. So I was on the carrier then during all of that blockade period, and did fly that one night. Well, there were two missions. The first night the flight was successful, but the lab technicians at Guantanamo Bay put the film into hypo, and so they didn't get any images, and so we repeated the mission the next night.
Got it. Speaking of night missions, Ken documents in the book that these were incredibly difficult missions. What made them so?
I think, one, you had to be very precise with selecting the image motion compensation for the aircraft. We had two ways of doing that. You could either dial in on the console of the air in the cockpit, the altitude and your airspeed. What needed to happen is the film on the back of the camera had to move in compensation with the terrain that's going, how fast the terrain is moving underneath the aircraft. So you could either dial in, which very seldom we did it this way. We could take those dials, and in a viewfinder we had that looked out a little bit forward of the aircraft and then directly below, and it had grid lines that would move down there. Depending on if your speed increased, you could increase the speed of the movement of those grid lines.
Yes.
So it was kind of a trial and error. You would rotate the knob until you got these grid lines on your viewfinder tracking with some point on the terrain, on the ground. And that way, then you had the correct image motion compensation. So that was probably the most difficult part of it. And then the aircraft flares were ejected from the aircraft behind the canopy. That then once they were out, then illuminated, they set off and they illuminated the ground below.
Got it. I was going to ask, I mean, how were these cameras able to see anything at night? It was through the use of the flares.
That's right. Yeah, you know, these were flares that, it was a bright flash and, illuminated the ground, and then the, once the light and the image bounced back into the camera, it closed the shutter.
Got it. Got it. Fascinating. Ken talks in the book about the inter-service rivalry that really came to the head, because the Navy, the Air Force, and the Marines, they all wanted to be the guys that were flying, that were taking the lead on Blue Moon. How did the Navy, how did VFP 62 get to be the lead squadron?
I think it was because of the Chicago aerial cameras that we had in the aircraft. And the Air Force knew that we had acquired these, knew that it was a much better camera. And as Ken discussed in the book, then the Navy allowed the Air Force to get some of the cameras a little bit ahead of when they normally would have, by giving up some that were, I think, intended for the Navy. But speaking of the rivalry, like on the carrier, we didn't fly those missions that actually flew over the missile sites. DOD and the administration decided they wanted those all flown from Key West, Florida, and not from the carrier. I know I gave the commanding officer of the squadron, William Eckert, had told us that he was lobbying to try and get permission for us to fly those missions from the carrier, or maybe fly off from the carrier to Key West and then do the mission from there. But that never came by. But as most aviators, we were really all chomping at the bit to get an opportunity to participate in some of these the more important missions.
Do you know why that idea of using aviators from the blockade was nixed? Was he ever able to share that with you?
No, but I'm sure it was probably because there was more control. You know, they wanted to make sure that, and then there was probably a total of 12 pilots. I forgot just the number, total number that Ken has in the book. But the majority of those, had been, flew multiple missions. So they had enough pilots that were already trained and experienced with flying those missions. And I think from that standpoint, it made sense to keep it restricted to that group.
Sure.
If it had been a smaller group and they needed more pilots, then they probably, could have pulled some of us off the carrier.
You guys were kind of sitting on the bench, waiting to get, waiting to come into relief pitch if called upon. Sure.
Yes.
And finally, how would you compare VFP 62 to other squadrons you served with?
Well, in talking with other pilots, I think many of us reviewed and thought of the first squadron we were in as probably the most fun. I had a second squadron tour in fighters flying in Vietnam, and then in the mid-70s was commanding officer of a fighter squadron, which was a real satisfaction in my career. But just the camaraderie, I think, of younger guys in a squadron. Some of my, best lifelong friends were established in that first squadron. Not to say that there haven't been in others, but there's just something special about the first squadron that you're in.
Sure, sure. So you went on to retire from the Navy?
Yes.
And did you stay in the aviation field?
Yes, I did. However, a lot of my last duty was as the I was director of inspections with the Naval Inspector General for 2 years, and then the Deputy Inspector General the last year.
Gosh.
Other shore duty, I had other duty in the Pentagon that was mostly working with the programming, planning, and budgeting system, helping the Navy, but it was all associated with aviation, but not operational flying.
Well, I can imagine you must look back on those days fondly, flying something as fast and agile as a Crusader.
That's right, and I also had the opportunity in the early 70s, shortly after the Navy's Fighter Weapons School Top Gun was initiated, to be an instructor there and the executive officer of the Top Gun School for a year.
Gosh. Awesome, awesome.
But I've often told, nephews and nieces and grandchildren, how nice it is to have a job where it's fun to get up and go to work in the morning. And we even got paid for it.
Right, exactly.
Like going to the carnival every day.
Yeah, I can only imagine. That's awesome. Well, sir, thank you so much for your service. Ken, did you have anything you wanted to add with the comments from Captain Curry?
Yeah, I think Jim did a very good job in explaining what a pilot's role was in the missions. One guess on my part about why the carrier guys never got a chance to fly Blue Moon missions was it was still a very real possibility that would there be an air attack on Cuba and an invasion following that. And I think they basically wanted to keep them in reserve in case that contingency ever needed to be fulfilled.
God, they didn't want to split forces unnecessarily.
I think that makes sense. Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, it's been wonderful speaking with you, Captain Curry. I appreciate your time today.
Okay, thank you.